Right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program J.D. Hansen, Policy Director with the International Center for Technology Assessment. And J.D., thanks so much for spending time with us tonight.
Okay, thank you.
The Center for Food Safety and your group, the International Center for Technology Assessment, filed a lawsuit against the United States Environmental Protection Agency on July 27th, challenging the agency's decision to conditionally approve the antimicrobial nanosilver pesticide for use in textiles and plastics. And as I understand it from reading some of the articles about this, nanosilver employs nanotechnology, a relatively new technology that, according to your organization and scientists out there, poses a risk to human health and the environment. And J.D., as we begin to examine this issue, I wonder if you explain to our audience the concern your group has about nanosilver that prompted this lawsuit.
Yes, we have been following different uses of nanosilver. Now, this is silver, in this case, the nanosilver product is silver mixed with silica, mixed with sulfur, mixed with some polymers. Virtually all of the different nanosilver compounds are used as pesticides. They're being used to make sure that algae doesn't grow or mold doesn't grow or some microorganism generally doesn't grow. In our opinion, most of the 400 or so products on the market are on the market illegally. This product, Nanosilver, is trying to get on the market legally, but the EPA is using a process called conditional registration, which means that they will let it go on the market legally, but the company has a number of years before they have to do all of the normal tests that a pesticide should have to do. And in the case of this nanosilver product, it's made by a company down in Georgia. We don't believe that the EPA, which is the Environmental Protection Agency, has done its work on the environmental risk of this product and is just assuming that it's negligible without producing the data to demonstrate that or without consulting with the other federal agencies that would know that.
And what is the concern? What is it about nanotechnology employed in this nanosilver product that has you and other folks around the country concerned to launch this lawsuit?
Well, on just the environmental grounds, this is a product that is, in this case, it's being approved to go into clothes. It's being approved to go into plastic lumber. It could be on a dock near you. So we're concerned that, you know, when this is stuck into plastic lumber, it's going to leach out. It's intended to leach out. And it will affect aquatic life right around it. A recent study in 2015 by University of California, Davis, looking at nanocopper, found that sea urchins were badly affected by this. So we want to see good data being used to approve these products. We're not saying this product should never be on the market. We're saying that the company and the EPA need to finish doing their research on it, though.
Now, just to go back to some of the basics, because I know I had a hard time just trying to understand the nature of nanotechnology in these products. As I understand it, these particles that are manufactured are smaller than anything found in nature. They're artificially made at the micron level, and
well, smaller than micron.
Yeah, if you could explain, the size of these molecules and by their very size, what threat they pose to human health and aquatic life, as you said.
If you took 1 nanometer and lined it up across a hair on your head, you could line up 10,000 of them. So these things are really, really small. The problem is they're small enough to go across the barriers. They're small enough to get into your cells. They're even small enough to get into the nucleus of your cells. So this is why they work good to kill microbes, because they get inside them and kill them. We want to be sure that they're not getting inside you. They're not getting inside of plants and organisms in the environment that they shouldn't be. And we want to see the test that demonstrates that. And that's what we're asking for.
Right. You know, the whole issue of nanotechnology, and I'll just take it to my own basic level of ignorance, but, nanotechnology is a subject that some people have seen, portrayed in futuristic science fiction movies and the like, where the skin of an airplane repairs itself, or nanoparticles are injected into the human body and, wrenches and other fantastical little gizmos within these just really small things are repairing your organs and such. I'm sure most of that is fantasy and nothing that's going to be coming true in our lifetime. But what can you tell us about the good as well as the bad applications in the future for nanotechnology?
Well, if any of your listeners have ever been on a Segway, that battery-powered contraption that people in Washington, D.C., where I live, go on tours around the mall on, those batteries are made with nano-lithium iron oxide batteries, they're, for the most part, better batteries. You can buy power tools already, like Ryobi drills also use those batteries. So we're already, there are applications that we're already seeing. There are tennis rackets that have carbon nanotubes in them to make them strong and flexible. Boeing is working on building airplane bodies out of those same carbon nanotubes. So we're starting to move actually pretty fast on this. But in the area of pesticidal products, nanosilver in various forms. This is just one compound that contains nanosilver and some other nano chemicals. But in various forms, the huge expansion of a product that's really a pretty good product when used appropriately. My father's a diabetic. His shoes have fabric lined with, nanosilver impregnated fabric in case he gets an infection. And so it's gone through a medical review. And it's a kind of nanosilver that has already gone through the review that we're asking the EPA to make sure that the pesticidal products go through that kind of rigorous review too.
Thank you. J.D. Hansen is our guest policy director with the International Center for Technology Assessment. We're talking about a lawsuit launched against the EPA for its approval of, or conditionally a conditional approval of, antimicrobial nanosilver pesticide. And J.D., what can you tell us about existing regulations when it comes to nanotechnology products? What regulations are there at present?
Well, the regulations aren't so good. And most of the agencies that are trying to regulate nanoproducts are using what they call guidances, which aren't really laws. They're just statements by the agency that says this is how we're going to be reviewing your product. Pesticide products, we are arguing, do need to go through the normal pesticide review and should be considered a new pesticide because of their small size. Silver has been approved for a long time, but nanosilver, we argue, is a different product, and it should go through its own approval process, which is a clear process. Unfortunately, the EPA is choosing to use conditional registration rather than the full registration, which fast-tracks the approval. And the General Accounting Agency of the government has criticized EPA for using this for pesticides in general, to the point that EPA has even lost lots of its files on conditional registration. So we don't like the process to begin with, and we think now that this is the third pesticide that's going through this process, and two others were by another company.
And what those were approved or on the shelf or what happened?
Well, they're conditional registrations after we and the Natural Resources Defense Council sued were conditionally approved, but with more conditions put on them.
J.D., what do we know about the possible harmful effects on human health from these incredibly small molecules in nanotechnology? I had read in an article that I think you had written about deaths of some workers exposed to nanoparticles in China.
Yeah, in China, and this is controversial, but the Chinese authorities are saying that these women who worked in a chemical plant that actually making adhesives and other things breathed in nanomaterials, and two of them died, and I believe it's seven got quite ill. And this is back in 2006, 2007, but wasn't published. The report wasn't published until a few years after that. What we want is for every facility that's making these nanomaterials, which if you breathe, most of them, if you breathe them in, you're going to get things the equivalent of breathing in asbestos. So we want systems designed so workers don't breathe them in the first place. We want systems designed through what Occupational Safety and Occupational Health and Safety Administration calls a hierarchy of controls. The very last thing you want is a worker breathing this stuff. You want to design it so the workers never breathe it, whether it's nanosilver or whether it's nanotitanium dioxide or some new adhesive product, you don't want it ever to be breathed in by a worker if you can help it, and you should be able to.
Now, I had read about some other uses for nanotechnology products, and that would be in the food industry and food packaging. Sounds a lot scary. Sounds very scary, as a matter of fact. What can you tell us about the inherent danger of using nanotechnology in food and food packaging?
Well, the biggest review of nano in food is done by the European Food Safety Administration, and they found about 250 nano food-related products worldwide. The largest category, again, was nanosilver. And what folks are doing is impregnating plastic containers, plastic packaging, with nanosilver of various sorts, so that they can, frankly, put in produce that still has a bacteria on it, ship it really long distances, and hope it doesn't rot. Some of our imported food, we've got evidence now, is having nanosilver, nanotitanium dioxide, other nanochemicals mixed with the waxes on the vegetables. Not exactly food packaging, but certainly food wrapping.
Wow, that doesn't sound good. If you bite into an apple or have a tomato that's got a wax on it of some kind to protect it and antimicrobial action,
yep.
These nanoparticles potentially could be something you would ingest, I would assume.
It could be something you ingest. And, so far, it looks like it's coming mostly from imported products.
Wow. So
there are other countries that are even more excited about nano than we are, and have even less restrictions for putting it on food.
J.D. Hansen, are there other countries in the world who have implemented regulations to better control nanotechnology and its possible ill effects on human health and the environment?
Well, Europe is starting to do so, and Europe has a new law that they're just implementing that would require for food that you label yet if it's got nano in it. We would rather not have it in it at all, but that's a step in the right direction. They have a law that governs, three different laws that govern chemicals, pesticides, and biocides. And all of them require a lot of data about nanomaterials before they're approved.
Unlike the United States, I guess.
Well, the EPA this week is doing a data call-in, they call it, trying to get data on nanochemicals basically from the last 10 years. The French have the data call-in that our EPA is proposing is if you make more than 10 tons of these substances, you have to report. The French are now requiring annual reporting, and they had 14,000 manufacturers report that they were making nano in France. But the French standard is a 100 grams. That's the equivalent of 20 teaspoons. So it's a much smaller volume If you make it in France, you got to tell the government and you got to tell them what you learned about it.
Judy, I'm wondering about the nature of these nanoparticles. Once they leave the product that they're impregnated in, molecular part of, can they spread? Can they move? Can they travel and pollute ecosystems that surround them?
Some can, and I'm on the board of something called the Center on the Environmental Implications of Nanotechnology, which is based down at Duke University. And they've done something that we need to have done for more products. They've taken nano silver that they've engineered, put it into sewage sludge, used it to grow vegetables and other plants to see how much of it gets taken up into the plants. And what they've learned is that some plants take up a lot and many take up none at all. So, in the same plot, and these are, they call them mesocosms, but they're big boxes about the size of a queen bed, where they're growing different mixes of vegetation in to try to understand what's going on just with one chemical that's likely to end up in your sewer system. What's it going to do to your plants when you dump it out on the soil?
Wow. Well, one big question that surrounds a lot of new technology and versus regulation is profit versus public health, safety, and the environment. Are the folks manufacturing nanotechnology products, do they have deep pockets to effectively fight the imposition of regulation to protect human health and the environment?
Well, many of them do. All of the big food companies are involved in this. All of the big chemical companies are involved in this. And though to some extent they're holding back a bit, waiting to see what happens to the little guys like this NanoSilva company in Georgia, to see how they get through the system, and then they'll what they often do is they buy up the ones that work out and ignore the ones that don't.
Well, in closing here, it's a bit depressing here, but what can listeners do to educate themselves about the risks and hazards of nanotechnology and become active on the issue if they choose?
Well, one of the things they can do is they can join our sister organization, Center for Food Safety. Now, this is silver. In this case, the nano silver product is silver mixed with silica, mixed with sulfur, mixed with some polymers. Virtually all of the different nano silver compounds are used as pesticides. They're being used to make sure that algae doesn't grow or mold doesn't grow or some microorganism generally doesn't grow. In our opinion, most of the 400 or so products on the market are on the market illegally. This product, NanoSilva, is trying to get on the market legally, but the EPA is using a process called conditional registration, which means that they will let it go on the market legally, but the company has a number of years before they have to do all of the normal tests that a pesticide should have to do. And in the case of this Nana Silver product, it's made by a company down in Georgia. We don't believe that the EPA, which is the Environmental Protection Agency, has done its work on the environmental risk of this product and is just assuming that it's negligible without producing the data to demonstrate that, or without consulting with the other federal agencies that would know that.
And what is the concern? What is it about nanotechnology employed in this Nano Silva product that has you and other folks around the country concerned to launch this lawsuit?
Well, on just the environmental grounds, this is a product that is, in this case, it's being approved to go into clothes. It's being approved to go into plastic lumber. It could be on a dock near you. So we're concerned that, when this is stuck into plastic lumber, it's going to leach out. It's intended to leach out. And it will affect aquatic life right around it. A recent study in 2015 by University of California, Davis, looking at nanocopper, found that sea urchins were badly affected by this. So we want to see good data being used to approve these products. We're not saying this product should never be on the market. We're saying that the company and the EPA need to finish doing their research on it, though.
Now, just to go back to some of the basics, because I know I had a hard time just trying to understand the nature of nanotechnology in these products. As I understand it, these particles that are manufactured are smaller than anything found in nature. They're artificially made at the micron level, and
well, smaller than micron.
Yeah, if you could explain, the size of these molecules and by their very size, what threat they pose to human health and aquatic life, as you said.
If you took 1 nanometer and lined it up across your hair on your head, you could line up 10,000 of them. So it is, these things are really, really small. The problem is they're small enough to go across your the barriers. They're small enough to get into your cells. They're even small enough to get into the nucleus of your cells. So this is why they work good to kill microbes, because they get inside them and kill them. We want to be sure that they're not getting inside you. They're not getting inside of plants and organisms in the environment that they shouldn't be. And we want to see the test that demonstrate that. And that's what we're asking for.
Right. You know, the whole issue of nanotechnology, and I'll just take it to my own basic level of ignorance, but, nanotechnology is a subject that some people have seen, portrayed in futuristic science fiction movies and the like, where the skin of an airplane repairs itself, or nanoparticles are injected into the human body and, wrenches and, other fantastical little gizmos within these, just really small things are repairing your organs and such. I'm sure most of that is fantasy and, nothing that's going to be coming true in our lifetime. But what can you tell us about the good as well as the bad applications in the future for nanotechnology?
Well, if any of your listeners have ever been on a Segway, that battery-powered contraption that people in Washington, D.C., where I live, go on tours around the mall on. Those batteries are made with nano lithium iron oxide batteries. And they're, for the most part, better batteries. You can buy power tools already, like Ryobi drills also use those batteries. So we're already, you know, there are there are applications that we're already seeing. There are tennis rackets that have carbon nanotubes in them to make them strong and flexible. Boeing is working on building airplane bodies out of those same carbon nanotubes. So we're starting to move actually pretty fast on this. But in the area of pesticidal products, nano silver in various forms. This is just one compound that contains nano silver and some other nano chemicals. But in various forms, the huge expansion of a product that's really a pretty good product when used appropriately. My father's a diabetic. His shoes have fabric lined with, nano silver impregnated fabric in case he gets an infection. And so it's gone through a medical review. It's a kind of nano silver that has already gone through the review that we're asking the EPA to make sure that the pesticidal products go through that kind of rigorous review too.
Thank you. J.D. Hansen is our guest policy director with the International Center for Technology Assessment. We're talking about a lawsuit launched against the EPA for its approval of, or conditionally a conditional approval of, an antimicrobial nano silver pesticide. And J.D., what can you tell us about existing regulations when it comes to nanotechnology products? What regulations are there at present?
Well, the regulations aren't so good. And most of the agencies that are trying to regulate nanoproducts are using what they call guidances, which aren't really laws. They're just statements by the agency that says this is how we're going to be reviewing your product. The pesticide products, we are arguing, do need to go through the normal pesticide review and should be considered a new pesticide because of their small size. Silver has been approved for a long time, but nano silver, we argue, is a different product, and it should go through its own approval process, which is a clear process. Unfortunately, the EPA is choosing to use conditional registration rather than the full registration, which fast tracks the approval, and the General Accounting Agency of the government has criticized EPA for using this for pesticides in general, to the point that the EPA has even lost lots of its files on conditional registration. So we don't like the process to begin with, and we think now that this is the third pesticide that's going through this process, and two others were by another company.
And what those were approved or on the shelf, or what happened?
Well, they're conditional registrations after we and the Natural Resources Defense Council sued, were conditionally approved, but with more conditions put on them.
J.D., what do we know about the possible harmful effects on human health from these incredibly small molecules in nanotechnology? I had read in an article that I think you had written about deaths of some workers exposed to nanoparticles in China.
Yeah, in China, and this is controversial, but the Chinese authorities are saying that these women who worked in a chemical plant that actually making adhesives and other things breathed in nanomaterials, and two of them died, and I believe it's seven got quite ill. And this is back in 2006, 2007, but wasn't published. The report wasn't published until a few years after that. What we want is for every facility that's making these nanomaterials, which if you breathe, most of them, if you breathe them in, you're going to get things the equivalent of breathing in asbestos. So we want systems designed so workers don't breathe them in the first place. We want systems designed through what the Occupational Safe and Occupational Health and Safety Administration calls a hierarchy of controls. The very last thing you want is a worker breathing this stuff. You want to design it so the workers never breathe it, whether it's nano silver or whether it's nano titanium dioxide or some new adhesive product. You don't want it ever to be breathed in by a worker. If you can help it, and you should be able to.
Now, I had read about some other uses for nanotechnology products, and that would be in the food industry and food packaging. Sounds a lot scary. Sounds very scary, as a matter of fact. What can you tell us about the inherent danger of using nanotechnology in food and food packaging?
Well, the biggest review of nano in food is done by the European Food Safety Administration, and they found about 250 nano food-related products worldwide. The largest category, again, was nano silver, and what folks are doing is impregnating plastic containers, plastic packaging, with nano silver of various sorts, so that they can, frankly, put in produce that still has bacteria on it, ship it really long distances, and hope it doesn't rot. Some of our imported food, we've got evidence now, is having nano silver, nano titanium dioxide, other nanochemicals mixed with the waxes on the vegetables. Not exactly food packaging, but certainly food wrapping.
Wow, that doesn't sound good. If you bite into an apple or have a tomato that's got a wax on it of some kind to protect it and antimicrobial action,
yep.
These nanoparticles potentially could be something you would ingest, I would assume.
It could be something you ingest. And, so far, it looks like it's coming mostly from imported products.
Wow. So
there are other countries that are even more excited about nano than we are, and have even less restrictions for putting it on food.
J.D. Hansen, are there other countries in the world who have implemented regulations to better control nanotechnology and its possible ill effects on human health and the environment?
Well, Europe is starting to do so, and Europe has a new law that they're just implementing that would require for food that you label it if it's got nano in it. We would rather not have it in it at all, but that's a step in the right direction. They have a law that governs, three different laws that govern chemicals, pesticides, and biocides. And all of them require a lot of data about nanomaterials before they're approved.
Unlike the United States, I guess.
Well, the EPA this week is doing a data call-in, they call it, trying to get data on nanochemicals basically from the last 10 years. The French have the data call-in that our EPA is proposing is if you make more than 10 tons of these substances, you have to report. The French are now requiring annual reporting, and they had 14,000 manufacturers report that they were making nano in France. But the French standard is a 100 grams. That's the equivalent of 20 teaspoons. So it's a much smaller volume. If you make it in France, you got to tell the government and you got to tell them what you learned about it.
J.D., I'm wondering about the nature of these nanoparticles. Once they leave the product that they're impregnated in, molecular part of, can they spread? Can they move? Can they travel and pollute ecosystems that surround them?
Some can, and I'm on the board of something called the Center on the Environmental Applications of Nanotechnology, which is based down at Duke University. And they've done something that we need to have done for more products. They've taken nano silver that they've engineered, put it into sewage sludge, used it to grow vegetables and other plants to see how much of it gets taken up into the plants. And what they've learned is that some plants take up a lot and many take up none at all. So, in the same plot, and these are, they call them mesocosms, but they're big boxes about the size of a queen bed, where they're growing different mixes of vegetation in to try to understand what's going on just with one chemical that's likely to end up in your sewer system. What's it going to do to your plants when you dump it out on the soil?
Wow. Well, one big question that surrounds a lot of new technology and versus regulation is profit versus public health, safety, and the environment. Are the folks manufacturing nanotechnology products, do they have deep pockets to effectively fight the imposition of regulation to protect human health and the environment?
Well, many of them do. All of the big food companies are involved in this. All of the big chemical companies are involved in this. And though to some extent they're holding back a bit, waiting to see what happens to the little guys like this Nanosilva company in Georgia. to see how they get through the system, and then they'll what they often do is they buy up the ones that work out and ignore the ones that don't.
Well, in closing here, it's a bit depressing here, but what can listeners do to educate themselves about the risks and hazards of nanotechnology and become active on the issue if they choose?
Well, one of the things they can do is they can join with our sister organization, Center for Food Safety. They can join them and get action alerts on nanochemicals. The next one they're likely to get is one about the Environmental Protection Agency, which, unlike the organic programs in Europe, which have banned nanochemicals from organic, ours has developed a way to get nano into organic, and we'll be doing some more action alerts to the National Organic Program soon, so they could sign up and work with the International Center for Technology Assessment and the Center for Food Safety to try to make sure at least organic food doesn't contain nano.
So you're saying right now some organic foods do or could potentially contain and carry nanotechnology products and still be classified as organic?
Yeah, right now, officially under the policy that the National Organic Program has, someone that wanted to use nano in organic would have to petition to allow it to be used.
Mm-hmm.
We just think it should be an excluded method, period. But there's been some testing by Arizona State University that found a couple of organic products that did contain nanoscale titanium dioxide. And when that was pointed out to the companies, they changed that. But we shouldn't have to, nonprofits and universities ought not to have to test every food. That's really the job of the government, to make sure they're doing it right.
All right. Well, J.D., could you leave our listeners with a website or websites that people can go to get more information?
Yeah. If they'd go to the Center for Food Safety, .org, just type out all that, and they will find information on this lawsuit and other actions they can take under the nanotechnology page.
Well, this is a whole new horizon of challenges to our environment and health. Scary stuff, but I'm glad you were here to tell us about the hazards we have to be more aware of. Thanks so much, J.D. Hansen. Appreciate you being with us tonight.
Okay, and I hope all your listeners have a good night.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye. That's J.D. Hansen, Policy Director with the International Center for Technology Assessment.